Donna, Donna Kitchen talks about food. Donna, Donna Kitchen talks recipes. Donna, Donna Kitchen talks about lots of other things on KHOI Radio. This is KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City and Ames. My name is Lana Noctigal. I'm here with the Donna, Donna Kitchen to talk about food and spring, poetry, good things to eat. It's spring. I can tell because there's little green things coming up. We haven't seen them for a very, very long time. The snowdrops are up. The crocuses are up. Tulips are up. And right on cue, we've got deer are mowing everything all off. But one nice thing about spring, things just keep growing. It does the heart good to see everything grow. I usually have a co-host on the Donna Lana Kitchen. Donna's been gone for way too long a time. She'll be back in a couple weeks. But today I've got some special guests, and we're going to be talking about good things to eat, and they have brought some poetry and thoughts about things in the future. So we'll get to that soon. Another thing about spring that I really enjoy is the arrival of new chicks. I've got a small backyard flock of hens, and every 2 years I get new chicks to kind of replace the old ones that are going into the soup pot. So just this week, I went off to Brecky's Feed Store on the east side of Ames. I picked up my little box of 24 cheeping chicks and brought them home and put them in their little chicken nursery for a while. Little chicks need to be coddled for the first little bit of their lives. They're under a heat lamp. They're be kept warm and dry. They're on some nice dry newspaper and with some wood chips around them. They're eating their little chick food, drinking water, and growing up quite nicely. You'd be surprised how fast they grow. They're really, really fun to have. So I know that although it may be cool and cloudy out today, little chicks are up and running and doing well. Another thing I know about spring is that it's time to plant. After a long, long cold winter, it's time to plant peas, time to plant lettuce, radishes, onions, potatoes, beets, kale. All the cooler stuff can go into the garden now, and I've got a few things in my garden. I hope you're thinking about what to put in your garden right now. Matter of fact, I've even got a few little lettuce seedlings shooting their way up out of the garden. Let's go to our first guest for today. I would like to welcome Paul Nelson to the kitchen today. Paul is a chief engineer here at KHOI and has done a wonderful job of getting the broadcast studio up and running. Now we've got a great place to do community radio. Paul, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I came to Ames in 1971 to work for Bourne's Corporation out on Airport Road. Since I've been in Ames, I've had three positions in the community. Bourne's, Hawk Chemical, and about 4 years ago, I retired from Sunstrand, Sour Danfoss or Sunstrand or whatever it's known by these days. Spent 30 years there, and I've thoroughly enjoyed the Ames community. It's been a very, very pleasant home. I came here from Arkansas, and because of that, I have a little bit of experience with Southern cooking.
And I've had the great luck of actually having been able to taste some of that. So that's really good. Because besides being a talented engineer, Paul also knows his way around a kitchen. I've asked him to join me here today to talk about his recipe for cornbread in particular. So tell us what you know about cornbread, Paul.
Well, simple is best, I've found. And what that means is not cheap ingredients, but good quality stuff. Stone ground cornmeal. I use typically Hodgson's Mill or If I can find something more local, I will use that. Bacon fat, butter, real eggs, good buttermilk, the whole nine yards. It really does make a difference. And one of the most necessary things is a well-seasoned cast iron skillet. Almost can't do good cornbread without a cast iron skillet.
Oh, one of those big black heavy jobs.
That's right.
Good. Yeah, cornbread is something that I came to actually after I moved to Iowa. I grew up in Wisconsin, and there cornmeal was something that you sort of saved to dredge your panfish in, perhaps. But
yep.
But cornbread is something I've really got a taste for, so that's good. The cornmeal, too, can make a big difference. Cornmeal that's sitting around in a cupboard can be kind of very, very tasteless. But like you said, a good quality, fresh ground cornmeal really helps to make the cornmeal.
Certainly does. And I'll just give you a quick recipe. Let's see. What I found... I found something printed many, many years ago that I have modified and used over the years that has worked very well for me. And let's say you have a 12-inch cast iron skillet. Then the ingredient list would go something like this. 4 cups of cornmeal. And again, good quality cornmeal. You don't want to stint on this stuff. 2 teaspoons full of salt. 3 very good free-range eggs. I highly recommend the ones that are produced by this upstart Ames farm called Onion Creek.
Home of Happy Hens.
Right. 3 cups of buttermilk, approximately, and I'll get into that a little bit later. 1.5 teaspoons of baking soda, and I'm going to say you should have 4 tablespoons of good melted bacon fat ready. And the way you work it is this. The general directions are as follows. You dissolve the soda in the buttermilk. Now, when you do that, leave a little bit of space in the container you used for the buttermilk because it will tend to bubble up and froth up a little bit.
Vesuvius eyes.
Mix the cornmeal and the salt and the egg and the buttermilk. The recipe that I've used for years says... Simply add hot melted bacon fat, pour into greased iron skillet, and bake at 375 until done. Well, there are some notes to that. One is preheat the oven. And prepare the skillet. And this is the way you do that. The recipe that I've used above, let's say, calls for 4 tablespoons of bacon fat. You put that in the skillet and heat it up on the top of the stove while you're mixing the very devil out of the other stuff. Now, when that fat is almost smoking, and it might be smoking a little bit.
This sounds dangerous, Paul.
You know, it's not really, but be careful. It's hot. Pour it into the batter while you're still mixing the batter, and then fill the skillet. Now, that skillet at this point should be hot enough that when you pour this batter in, it will sizzle. Pop it straight into the oven and bake it 375 once again until it cracks and browns on top and then pulls away from the skillet a little bit on the side. I predict you'll love it.
I do love it. I remember it being has a wonderful, wonderful crust, wonderful outside to it.
Yep.
And wonderful taste. I've done a similar sort of procedure, I've used just butter, which is not too shabby, but somehow using the bacon fat really is lovely.
I think it does make a difference. And I should say, too, that the 3 cups of buttermilk is only a guide. Simply add enough so that the batter is smooth, and let experience be your guide. Experimentation is definitely encouraged with this.
Good. This kind of cornbread celebrates Iowa. Pigs and corn. What a good idea.
I think it does.
I should
note, this is not sweet cornbread. This, I don't really consider sweet cornbread to be cornbread. I just didn't grow up that way.
Sounds more like cake. Well, cornbread is a wonderful, wonderful vehicle for putting sweet things on later, if you so wish.
That's exactly right. When this cornbread comes out of the oven, what you should do is take that skillet, turn it upside down, and whap it on a great big piece of wood, and let that cornbread come right out. Immediately cut it. Immediately put a whole bunch of butter on it, and then good local honey.
Ah, wonderful. I also would suggest maple syrup is good on it.
Oh, yeah.
Or raspberry jam. See, it's a vehicle for a lot of other things.
It's also a vehicle for good black-eyed peas.
Ah, yes. Cornbread goes with a lot of good things. Black-eyed peas and ham, or just black-eyed peas done in a vegetarian style. That leads to a good potluck possibility. Reminds me of New Year's Day.
Mm-hmm. Well, for a number of years on New Year's Day, this actually comes from my Arkansas background. You have to eat black-eyed peas and ham and cornbread on New Year's Day. And if you do, then you're supposed to have good luck for the rest of the year. Or let's say it should be an absence of bad luck.
Oh, has it worked for you so far?
Sometimes. Most of the time, yes. Actually, it's worked very well while I've been in Ames. I've been able to stay here and stay relatively healthy, and I think it's all due to that.
Well, cornbread is the start of great things, the start of great things. That's good. You have a little poem there.
Oh.
Why don't you read the little poem?
Well, the basics of this recipe came from a cookbook that I picked up many years ago. This sort of a little paperback thing. Princess Pamela's Kitchen. Princess Pamela, if I recall correctly, and I don't have the information here, but she was a southern transplant in New York City who had a soul food restaurant for many years. Anyway, at the head of each chapter, she has a little poem, and this one goes like this. She says, "Making cornbread is like making love. No matter where you do it, it's called the same thing, but how you do it makes a heap of difference."
Ah, words to live by. Oh, yes. That sounds wonderful. One of the things, you talk about cornbread with black-eyed peas and ham. Anything else that you just have to have cornbread with?
Really good chili.
Oh, what a good idea.
Really good chili. And there, I kind of, I take some notes from the Southwest. I really prefer green chili, which is composed of nothing more than stewed green chilies and perhaps a little meat. That's pretty good stuff.
Oh, that sounds good. Cornbread and green chili. Sounds wonderful.
Works well with almost anything, though.
Yeah, I think so. And especially on a cool, on a coolish sort of day, the coolish spring day today, it's relatively easy. Think about making these quick breads, the kind that you can stir together and have hot piping for your dinner this evening.
And it's easy.
It's easy.
It sounds a little involved, but truth to tell, it's easy. And you can mix and match. You don't have to be dogmatic about the quantities in this recipe. If you get close, it'll work.
That's a very reassuring sort of thing, yes. Do you have to have buttermilk? Sometimes buttermilk is not something that you always have.
You know, I don't think I've ever used anything else but buttermilk.
Okay.
There again, experimentation is encouraged. And you might find it, if you have a problem with milk of various sorts, you might find this will work well without milk. I don't know. I've never tried it.
Well, there's other kinds of milk substitutes, too.
Yeah.
Some of these basic feed the soul, feed the stomach side kind of things. Ah, cornbread.
Lovely stuff.
I want to thank you for coming into the kitchen today and helping us talk about cornbread. This recipe, if Paul gives me the nod, will be on the Donna Lana Kitchen website that you can find, khoi.org. And you can find all kinds of other recipes from past shows, including this recipe. And do not be intimidated by the smoking skillet. It just sort of makes everything real nice and tasty.
Right. You might want to push the hush button on your smoke alarm.
Old hen sitting in a chimney jam this evening. There's an old hen sitting in a chimney jam. show this morning, this evening, right now. And how many biscuits can you eat this morning?
This morning.
How many biscuits can you eat this evening?
This evening.
Well, how many biscuits can you eat for tonight? I'm gonna have a meat this morning, this evening, right now. Can you eat this morning?
This morning.
How many biscuits can you eat this evening?
This evening.
Well, how many biscuits can you eat for tonight? I'm gonna have a meat this morning, this evening, right now.
That was one of my favorite biscuit tunes by the Freight Hoppers. The Freight Hoppers are a great old-time band. Actually, I think they were here in Ames last fall at DG's Tap House. And what a great biscuit tune. Cornbread, corn bone, corn cakes, and Johnny cakes. There's all kinds of biscuits. There's powder milk biscuits, buttermilk biscuits, throwed and dropped. They're really fun to make and help us fill our appetite. I've got a little poem here by Roy Blunt Jr. from his book Soup Songs, all kinds of wonderful odes and poems to food. And this is his Toast to Appetite. It refers to the concept of being as hungry as a bear, and I think all of us have been there once or twice. So here is his Toast to Appetite. I intend to eat the bear that you see over there. My dog would like to eat it, but I have too well trained the mutt. The bear is mine. First, some wine. Then I'm going to eat the bear, broiled, mostly, medium rare. Eat it all from scotch to goozle, small bits fried in lard, as usual. May well eat it all tonight. Couldn't without appetite. Appetite. Every bite I take, I owe to you for being there. And now, I'll be off with my bear. You are listening to the Donalana Kitchen on KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City in Ames. We are a community-supported community radio station. All of us get together, have a really good time putting together these shows, and encourage you to support the station with your time, with your talent, and also with your hard, cold cash, because every little bit helps us stay on the air. Now we'll go on to talk about some more food. I had a good friend come into the studio, and again, in the absence of my co-host, Donna, we have another good friend coming in. Hello, this is Lana Donna Kitchen. My name is Lana. I'd like to welcome to the kitchen today a good friend, a good cook, and a good writer, Brenna Dixon. Hello, Brenna.
Hello, Lana. Thanks for having me.
Brenna is a local writer. She's a poet, and she's currently a teacher at Iowa State University, teaching fiction and composition. I met Brenna at some very good potlucks. She always brings good food, and also, many different things over the years. Tell me a little bit about yourself, Brenna.
Oh, a little bit about myself. Lana, you already said that I'm a writer and musician, and I like to cook, which I guess is kind of, in large part, the basis of our friendship, right, over food and its various states of being. I'm going to be an artist in residence at Everglades National Park in June this summer, where I will get to eat the foods of my home state, Florida. So I'm excited about that.
That's wonderful that writers can actually get to go do what you're supposed to be doing. Tell me a little bit about the kind of food that you find in Florida. What makes you think about home?
Oh, Cuban food. And key lime pie.
Key lime pie.
Mm-hmm. There's no key lime pie like Florida key lime pie, and I will stand by that. Frozen key lime pie dipped in chocolate on a stick after the beach. Mm-hmm. But tostones, so fried plantains, green plantains.
Oh, that's what a tostone is.
Yeah, tostones. So you chop up the green plantain and flatten it and fry it, and really pretty delicious. A little bit of adobo seasoning. Oh, yeah.
Bananas with a little pepper seasoning. How do you flatten them?
With the bottom of a can of beans.
Oh, really? The bottom of a can of beans? And then just fry it in?
Yeah, you put olive oil or whatever kind of oil you prefer in a cast iron pan or a bigger pan, and you chop the tostone, the plantain, green plantain, into cuts that are about maybe an inch or two, like you would cut a banana for cereal. And then you take the bottom of the can of beans and you squish it flat. Fry it up, after, of course, frying the chunks first, so it's twice fried. Put a little adobo seasoning, which is a type of seasoned salt, all over it, and it's pretty delicious.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Speaking as a Midwesterner, plantains are not bananas.
Not quite. They're similar, but they're not quite. And when you get them green, they're really savory. As they ripen, they turn, you know, the black skin's like a banana. Then you would have sweet plantains, and you can cook them the same way and have just delicious fried sweet plantains. But typically, I think people boil them. I could be wrong because I haven't done it yet, but they're either way delicious.
Florida food. How wonderful. That's great. So evidently, you cook, you bake. Wonderful. What do you like to eat? What's currently on your plate?
Oh, lately I've been playing with grilled cheese and frittatas. So I first figured out how to make frittata after watching Joe out at your house, actually. And yes, have been playing around with them since, and powwowed and taught my neighbor how to make them for a potluck. And they're super easy and delicious. And
describe what a frittata is.
Well, I'll be honest and say I'm not sure if this is a traditional frittata, but in my book it's a frittata.
It's a central Iowa.
Yeah. So it's, you know, basically whatever produce you've got in your fridge and eggs. And so you cook up the veggies and whatever else you want in it. So recently I used asparagus because I had asparagus that was, you know, about to go bad.
Oh, what a, this sounds like a good opportunity.
Yeah. Asparagus and sweet bell peppers and onion and fresh garlic. Kale has been in there before. Carrots sometimes if you got them. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever veggies you fancy. Could use frozen veggies if you want to, if you're, you know, pinching pennies and, you know, in a bind.
Or if that's what's in your refrigerator.
Yeah, if that's what you've got.
Yes.
It's, you know, kind of like a garbage meal. You know, you throw everything in there.
But frittata does sound a lot better.
It does. Better than garbage pail eggs, right?
Very good.
So you know, cook up the veggies, and with whatever spices, I use a little bit of curry and salt and pepper, garlic salt sometimes if I want a little extra.
You saute the whichever vegetables you find first.
Yeah.
Very well, or still a little crunchy, or?
I like to do them still a little crunchy, but I like my veggies a little crunchy on a good day, so. Potatoes are good in there, you know, slice them thin with a mandolin. So I cook them up and then with butter, because that works better with oil or with eggs than oil, I think. Crack 5 or 6 eggs, add a little milk, scramble them up, and then just dump it on the
veggies. Okay. So the eggs are whipped up, mm-hmm. are turned into scramble the eggs sort of things, not in the pan on top of the vegetables,
right.
But separate in another bowl to
mm-hmm.
wash,
mm-hmm.
and then dump that in.
Yeah, on top of the veggies, and kind of, you know, twist the pan around so that it's evenly spread. And then I like to just keep it on low, medium, low heat, and put the lid back on the pan so that it cooks quicker, because it's good to have a fast meal, in my, you know, busy opinion. Mm-hmm. Then you just wait till the edges start to brown as it gets toward the end of that process. Put a little cheese on top, maybe some tomatoes, you know, not freeze dried. I'm losing the word.
Sun-dried
or dehydrated tomatoes on top, right. too, if
yes.
it's in the winter months.
Probably if you added fresh tomatoes at this stage,
which would be to your taste, but it would kind of make things mushy.
It would,
but,
yeah.
But that, if you like mushy, that's perfectly fine.
It's also why I wait till the end to put the cheese on top instead of mixing it in with the eggs, because it changes the consistency, makes it a little bit harder to tell if it's done, I think, sometimes.
It's nice. So you look for a nice crusty edge on the edge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you've got an oven-proof pan, you can put them right in the oven, too, and just do that either the whole time or toward the tail end. But it's a pretty low-maintenance thing.
Wonderful. In a rather warm oven, in a broiler sort of oven or a hot oven? Or
Usually, I don't know, between 200 and 300 degrees. It doesn't have to be super hot, you know, if you cook it on top of the stove a little bit first. If you're doing it all in the oven, then it can be, I believe, upwards of 350, I would say, 375.
All right, that's good. This sounds like the kind of thing that is very easy to do, but it might work really well for a brunch or a potluck, too.
Oh, absolutely. I just had one at a brunch the other day.
Good. It slices up nicely. Mm-hmm. People can take what they want. It's a nice way to use mm-hmm. eggs. Since it's spring, let's all think about eggs. I think chickens all over this country are kicking in and they're mm-hmm. ready to produce more eggs. So now we start thinking about how to use those eggs. That's wonderful.
I'm excited about that because that means you guys are going to have more eggs.
Anyone with backyard chickens, talk to those girls. They're doing good this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
The Easter Bunny may get the credit, but it's the chickens. It's the chickens. Yeah. You also mentioned grilled cheese.
Oh, yes. Grilled cheese is delicious. And I think really wonderful for this time of year, especially because we're transitioning from being real cold into, maybe not so cold, despite what, you know, random snow may happen. So I've been experimenting with grilled cheese. Yeah. Recently for St. Patrick's Day, I always make Irish soda bread. And so I, you know, made up a loaf of that, slice it up, put some Irish cheddar on it, a little bit of mustard, and mustard on grilled cheese has been my recent thing. Made, you know, called it an Irish, Irish grilled cheese, whether that's accurate or not, is delicious.
Good. Mm-hmm. And how do you grill it? On top of the stove or in an oven or in a microwave?
Oh, just on top of the stove. Yeah.
Stove, lovely.
Yeah.
So the cheese is made into a sandwich form and you flip?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, mm-hmm. so some time on one side, some time on the other. That sounds relatively easy.
Yeah.
Things you can put between bread. What a wonderful idea.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Talk to me more about Irish soda bread. I have a wonderful time baking. But things that say bread to me, I always have a good result the first day, and then all my bread seems to turn into rocks. I don't know. So tasty, but heavy, mm-hmm. heavy. So talk to me about Irish soda bread.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, if your bread turns into rocks, though, you can turn it into French toast.
Oh, well.
Which is, you know, always delicious, unless it's really, really rock.
another good use for eggs. Thank you, Brenna. Thank you.
But so, Irish soda bread is...
Irish soda bread, yes.
Oh, I think I made my first loaf of that in high school when a friend and I were doing a cultural project. She had to choose... a country, and we had to make the food from that country, and so we made corned beef homemade, which made her house smell real good, you know, and with that we made Irish soda bread, and so ever since I've been making it as often as I can on St. Patrick's Day, and it's really great. It's a soda bread, so there's not any yeast involved, and I know technically you're supposed to have currants in it from my understanding, but I just use whatever raisins or dates or, you know, dried fruit I have on hand. Craisins sometimes. And it tastes
craisins,
just as good.
Craisins, a good marketing tool. I like mm-hmm. that word, craisins.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So Irish soda bread ends up as a loaf bread or as a, do you leave it in a round shape?
Yeah, usually it's a round bread. I suppose you could do it as a loaf, but I've always eaten it as a round bread.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you said it doesn't have yeast. Does it require kneading?
Very little. Okay. It's not a very knead-heavy bread.
Not overly kneady.
No, it's pretty good.
So a lot of the mixing goes with the spoon.
It does. Or, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a dough hook for a mixer, which I kind of cheat sometimes and use because it's handy-dandy, then you'll just mix it with a spoon or with the dough hook or whatever you have. Take it out of the bowl, knead it a couple times, and you know that's that.
Sounds wonderful. It sounds like the kind of thing that would be wonderful warm.
Mm-hmm. And the buttermilk has a really great flavor. Yeah, and well, in the particular recipe that I was using, there's buttermilk.
Good, good. So I will ask you to leave the recipe with me, and we'll have the recipe available on the Donalana Kitchen website that you can find via the KHOI website. So go to KHOI, find us on the website, and go through all that good stuff. Find the Donalana Kitchen, and there will be recipes there. Look for Brenna's Irish Soda Bread. It'll be really good. You also mentioned something, another kind of good bread. Whole wheat, pumpkin, beer, bread.
Oh, that's last year's experiment. This year, grilled cheese. Last year, beer, bread. This is, you know, how to keep yourself happy in the winter, right? Eat carbs. So, you know, with a potluck, people bring beer usually. Those of age, anyway, you know. And I'm not a huge beer drinker, and so people will bring this beer, and they'll leave it at my house, and then I'll have a ton of beer, and you know, eventually got to figure out something to do with it. Back home, we would use it to cook up shrimp, boil shrimp, beer boil shrimp with some Old Bay sauce. But here in Iowa, beer bread. So, you know, it's super easy. You just take a bottle of beer, 12 ounces, 3 cups of flour, a couple teaspoons of baking powder, and throw it all together. Again, no yeast because beer takes care of that. And so I played around with traditional recipes until I found one I liked, and then started toying with it myself. So I've been using pumpkin beer and whole wheat, or if not full whole wheat, then half whole wheat and half regular flour, and putting that all together, and it's turned out pretty nicely with a little bit of honey and butter and, you know, jam from Lana.
Jam. Oh, yes, jam. Beer bread sounds like a wonderful thing to do. Do you find that the different kind of beer makes, you talk about pumpkin beer, mm-hmm. so the pumpkin taste in your pumpkin bread comes from the pumpkin beer.
Yep.
So if you used a stout or heaven knows what, a honey wheat something or other, could you do that too?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Different flavors. I've used also Old Main's lemon thyme beer in that. I'm not sure if they're making that one anymore, but if you have it and you have a growler, you know, use the leftovers for beer bread, and it's really light and kind of summery for that time of year, and pumpkin beer for fall and winter. Yeah.
That sounds good. Lemon for the spring. That mm-hmm. sounds good. Do you find that, you mentioned using the bottom of a growler. What a good idea. Does the beer have to be effervescent, or can it be slightly flat?
You know, I don't know that I've ever tried it with flat beer, but I bet it would be okay. But I don't know that it would rise quite as well because of the yeast.
Experiment. Yeah. Anything's good with butter.
Yeah, if anybody tries it with flat beer and it works, tell me.
Flat beer bread. Or pointy beer bread. That's good. Wonderful. So again, recipe. Look for it on the Donna Lana Kitchen, part of KHOI website. Besides being someone who really likes cooking, as you can tell, Brenna is a wonderful writer. She's a poet. And I've heard her read some of her poetry, and I've asked her to read something today. So if you'd talk about what you're going to read and give us a little bit. Make us hungry.
Sure. This is a poem that I wrote in the high heat of July last summer, sitting on my porch, eating an entire fresh pineapple by myself because I love pineapple. And to me, you know, food is a happy place. And so I was very, very happy sitting on my porch eating that pineapple. And I realized I sure do love pineapple. So I wrote a love poem to pineapple, which I've read a couple times at the Ames Poetry Revival's Poetry Slam every Tuesday night at DG's, or every first Tuesday of every month at DG's, excuse me. Slam starts around 8:30 poet time. So I figured, since we're talking food and community and the love of food, and
this happens to be one of my favorite Brenna poems.
Thanks, Lana.
When I heard her read this ages ago, I have to get to know this woman. So thank you.
Yes, well, thank you. So this is the aptly titled Pineapple, a Love Poem. Oh, pineapple, you sit before me so round, so knobby. Green tuft rising out of the fruit of you, and I want you. Want to suck you down and peel you clean. I want the sweetness of you between my teeth. I want you in pieces before me, honest and bare. I want to consume you, all of you, in one sitting. I want you on my porch in the heat of summer, sweaty and tart. I will love even the core of you, the tough middle everyone throws away. I want to mix you with sticky rice, freeze you with chili powder so I can eat you as paletas. I want you in all forms, on all days, always. And when you're gone, just empty skins at the bottom of my trash can, I'll go to the store and buy another for $3.89.
Thank you, Brenna.
Thank you.
Talking about food today with Brenna Dixon, a wonderful woman who knows about words and knows about food. Talking about the idea of food as community building. Potlucks are a very Midwestern sort of thing. Food talks to us in many different ways. Sometimes we can say more with a little bit of food than with a lot of words. Friends of ours just lost a beloved pet today. And Brenna mentioned that she might like to bake something for them.
Oh, yeah. I think that, food, since my move to Ames, Iowa, five years ago, food has been kind of the basis and gathering point, I guess, of friends and community. When I started grad school and now outside of grad school, when I meet somebody new, I want to cook for them because, the sharing of food, it's important and it's lovely and it builds things. And then also when people are hurting, my instinct is, hey, cook for them. So I guess one of my favorite comfort foods to bake for people is a good banana bread. And that was my college experimentation. We're talking about experiments earlier, with the grilled cheese and the beer bread. I made a whole bunch of different kinds of banana breads in college. And
you touched a lot of people.
Yeah.
With banana bread.
Yeah, peanut butter banana bread, blackberry banana bread, chocolate banana bread. So I'd probably be making a banana bread for those friends of ours.
Thank you. This last year, this past season, Central Iowa had a bountiful crop of tree fruit. I'm sure apples are still available in some of our refrigerators and some of our freezers. And applesauce, apple pies, apple butter. Ah, those wonderful memories. Mm-hmm. Brenna, you have a poem about applesauce, I believe. Tell us a little bit about it and read us some.
I do. I do have a poem about apples. It's a poem called Applesauce by Iowa native Ted Kuser, and it's part of an anthology called The Hungry Ear, Poems of Food and Drink, edited by Kevin Young. And I particularly love this poem because, well, my grandmother makes wonderful applesauce, and apples weren't something that I loved, especially in Florida, because, you know, it's a long way between an apple orchard and South Florida. So I was a citrus girl, you know, lots of oranges and things like that. And then moving here, the experience is kind of flipped, where the oranges, you know, not so good. Maybe I'm just spoiled. But the apples are just amazing here. And so I relish the opportunity to eat anything with Iowa apples in them. So I guess I'll go ahead and read Applesauce by Ted Kuser. I liked how the starry blue lid of that saucepan lifted and puffed, then settled back on a thin hot pad of steam, and the way her kitchen filled with the warm, wet breath of apples, as if all the apples were talking at once, as if they'd come cold and sour from chores in the orchard and were trying to shoulder in close to the fire. She was too busy to put in her 2 cents worth of talking to apples. Squeezing her dentures with wrinkly lips, she had to jingle and stack the bright brass coins of the lids and thoughtfully count out the red rubber rings, then hold each jar to see if it was clean, to a window that looked out through her backyard into Iowa. And with every 3rd or 4th jar, she wiped steam from her glasses, using the hem of her apron printed with tiny red sailboats that dipped along with leaf green banners, snapping under puffs of pale applesauce clouds, scented with cinnamon and cloves, the only boats under sail for at least 2,000 miles.
Thank you, Brenna.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI Community Radio. My name is Lana Noctigal. We've had a wonderful time hearing about all kinds of good food today and poetry. Somehow food and words go together quite well, I think. We're coming to you from KHOI studio, and I want to also mention that we're in a brand new space. Well, actually, we're in the same physical space, but the physical space has been transformed from the old Ames Pantorium to something that looks really awful much like a real professional broadcast studio, and it's a real pleasure to be here. We are in a room with 4 walls. I'm looking at Rick Morrison, a really good engineer, sitting here with all kinds of stuff around him. Got all kinds of wonderful up-to-date equipment. This is a wonderful studio. We're no longer in the front window of the old Ames Pantorium. We're kind of back farther in the building a little bit. However, there still is a window. And I'd like to encourage you to come down and visit us. This is a community radio station, after all. And the more people that come down, The more fun we have. I don't mind people looking in the window and making faces. I know how to ignore you. That's just fine. So come and see us make live radio. Come and meet some of the people down here. And consider getting involved yourself. I can speak from experience. I didn't think I would ever be in front of a microphone. I don't know exactly what I'm doing here. But I'm learning, and I'm having a really, really good time. The Donna Lana Kitchen Show started as an idea last fall. I get together with my friend Donna Prisgintis, and we find that we talk. And someone suggested that both of us get together and do a show for the Ames community and the surrounding community about local food, growing it, eating it, farming it, and enjoying it. So that's how it started. And with the help of all the fine people down here at KHOI Radio, we're kind of learning how to do this. Donna, my co-host, has been gone for the past couple
of weeks, she is visiting friends and family on the other side of the world. She's in New Zealand right now, but she promises all of us that she will be back soon. I think in like 2 weeks, mid-May is about the time for Donna arrival. Yes, so if Donna and I can do this, so can you. If you don't like what's on the radio, come and meet us, meet the people here, and consider doing your own show. It's a lot of fun, really, I must say. I've got a little thing I would like to read for you here. I'm a great library visitor, and I have a book called Wicked Plants, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities by Amy Stewart. Since I'm a gardener, I had to pull this off the shelf and read it. If you read it from cover to cover, you end up feeling really itchy and ill. So don't read everything here. But she's got some really interesting things about the plant kingdom. And here is a little item about nettles. Nettles are something we find in Iowa. Coming up this summer, he'll probably run into a patch every now and then. Remember what it feels like to run into nettles? Oh, yes, warm weather. So it's under a heading called Painful. Meet the nettles. How could the tiny fine hairs on a nettle possibly hurt? Those delicate trichomes act as hypodermic needles, injecting venom under the skin when you brush against them. Although any number of painful plants are referred to as nettles, true nettles come from the family Urticaceae. They are mostly weedy perennials that spread by underground rhizomes, and they make themselves at home throughout North America, Europe, Asia, and parts of Africa. A variety of compounds deliver the nettle sting, including a muscle toxin called tartaric acid, as well as oxalic acid, which is found in a number of fruits and vegetables and can irritate the stomach. Formic acid, a component of bee and ant stings, is also present in nettles at low levels. Fortunately, there is a folk remedy for nettle stings, nettle juice. That's right, the sap from crushed leaves is believed to counteract the acidity of the sting. Dock, a weed that often grows near nettles and grows here in Iowa, may also soothe the nettle sting, and dock leaves are blissfully free of sharp, poisonous spines. There's little evidence about the effectiveness of these remedies, but experts agree that the task of looking for a dock leaf might take one's mind off of the pain. The news on nettles is not all bad. Young nettle shoots, when boiled to remove the hairs, are a nutritious spring delicacy. So if you have the courage, find yourself some nettles. You can. I've done this in the past. Put yourself a pair of gloves on. You can harvest the nettles with your gloves and dunk them in boiling water. And then you can dump that water out and cook them a little bit more in water. And you'll have a very nice green to eat. Works real fine. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kinchin. We've heard music by the Freight Hoppers. And Al Murphy, during the middle of the show, played a wonderful tune called Through the Fields. Al Murphy is a fiddler from the Iowa City area and a real fine Iowa treasure. My name is Lana Nochtigal. Thanks to engineer Rick Morrison for helping me get through this show one more time. We'll end the show with a tune by the band Kirkmount, traditional music of Nova Scotia and Cape Breton. The tune is called The Robin. I've been reminded that I should have a sign-off to this. So, from the Donna Lana Kinchin, eat good food, enjoy life.